I think we're going to begin. And this sound you hear is my voice. I'm Chris Paff of Chris Paff Tech Media, LLC. It's great being here at South by Southwest 2024 for how immersive audio can deliver powerful experiences. We have a powerful panel, as you can see here. Mirko Vogel, who is the managing partner Canada US and is the head of the immersive sound division at Vaudeville Sound Group, comes from Vancouver. Give it up for Mirko Vogel, please. Yeah. Gentlemen, to his left is one of the powerhouses of the encoding world. I've known him for many years. It's Jani Huopanen with Google, and Jani is currently the group product manager of immersive audio and open media. Please give it up for Jani Huopanen.
Woo!
Last but not least is one of the most exciting, colorful people I've met in recent years and possibly my entire life is Silvana Levy. She's the CEO of XR Agency. She's an amazing hybrid experiential producer. She's going to blow your mind with some of the things she's going to show. Please give it up for Silvana Levy. In this new immersive, engaging world, we do not do what other panels do, where they tell you, please silence your devices. No, turn on your devices, please open whatever apps you want, please stream capture, because we will, at the end of our discussion, before your questions, we will have a prompt for you to play some immersive audio, so a little tease, get you excited. So please do not silence or stifle your devices. So thank you. That's the only housekeeping we'll have. And now we're going to dive in really quickly. As you may have seen, immersive sound encompasses the building and implementation of photorealistic 3D sound objects in environments. We're going to talk about objects a lot here. Sound objects are multi-channel sound files captured and designed with specific techniques that enable users to feel unparalleled connections to what they experience visually. Immersive or spatial audio can deliver enhanced experiences for a wide range of industry sectors. We'll talk about this, including auditory healing for healthcare, architecture, media, and entertainment, of course, and many others. So 3D audio, spatial audio, can include surround sound. Many of you know that term. Immersive audio creates sound objects that can be placed anywhere in a 3D sound field. This is not a small market. Insight Partners projects this to be a $19 billion market globally by 2030. And we see this increasingly used, of course, in storytelling. XR headsets, podcasts, audiobooks, yes, and web XR experiences. Automotive entertainment systems, yes. Live events, location-based entertainment. Silvana will get into that. So without further ado, we're going to have our panelists present some slides. Show me, don't tell me is one of my mantras. And afterwards, we'll have a panel discussion followed, of course, by your questions. So without further ado, Mirko Vogel.
Chris, that was a powerful introduction.
The word powerful, because it's 10 a.m., ladies and gentlemen. For some of us, it's a tad early. So give yourself a round of applause for being here early. Please, please. I didn't see you clapping. Yeah.
We were just saying this morning, I think all we've got left is buzzwords after.
Yeah, and buzzword
Biz
bingo.
Biz dev, green lights.
Yeah, if you play buzzword bingo and you
ICOs.
Hear
ICOs.
ICOs, yes. Yes, we're not doing an ICO here today, so please, please, I don't want the viral videos. Yeah, go ahead, Mirko.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mirko Vogel. Thank you for the kind introduction, Chris, and inviting us onto this panel here. It's really nice to sit up here with these amazing people, and it's really nice to be able to show you some of the work that we do. Before I click the side.
Okay.
Oh, there we go.
All right. Very
Yay.
Good. we didn't pay the clicker enough.
Okay. So Rob Calder, my business partner here, and I run this company, Vaudeville Sound. And I'll blast through a little bit of a history of what we do as a company and why I'm sitting up here. So we're an international creative sound company. We have offices in Vancouver, Los Angeles, and in London, England. We are one of the largest 3D audio asset providers globally. thanks to some of the work that we've done with companies like Google, with Shutterstock. I think at this point we've got somewhere around 60,000 assets that we've built for companies. And through all of the sort of partner work that we do, we produce around about 1,000 hours of immersive content per year. This year, probably a little bit less, but in previous years, that's what we've sort of done. And we work across a sort of a broad range of genres of work, and you know, from sort of linear entertainment content all the way through to sort of larger interactive and experiential projects. I'll kind of run through some of the projects that we've worked on. Who here is actually sort of, I mean, I see some familiar friends and faces here, but who's familiar with immersive audio as a concept? How many of you have actually heard immersive audio? Definitely. Okay. Well, it's nice to see some people that haven't heard it. So I think it sort of changes its shape and scope depending on the projects that we work on. And a lot of our job when we work with clients is to try and actually educate them on what's possible and to try and sort of advise on the best, you know, technologies and systems to use. So one of the projects that we worked on is this project with Shutterstock, where we really try to sort of sell them on the future of immersive audio, and instead of just creating sort of 2D sound design assets, here we're like, well, what are people going to create in 10 years from now? If you're going to build something and invest in a catalog of work, how will people use that? And overwhelmingly, that's sort of in 3D environments and 3D space. So this is where we develop most of our sort of big ambisonic asset library, and met like a really nice team of people. Obviously, sitting here with Yanni from Google, we've done some really amazing work with Yanni and his team that he can talk a little bit more about as well. And it's essentially here were the creative launch partners for the IAMF standard CES this year, which was awesome and really really exciting to see the incredible work that Google are doing to democratize and open source immersive audio. We worked on one of the sort of first big Dolby Atmos audiobooks for Penguin Random House. Last year we were here with a VR experience called The Dark, which was one of the first volumetric captured music videos that was all sort of captured and rebuilt in ambisonics. We've worked with companies like Dolby as well, where we launched Dolby Atmos for music with The Weeknd and Billie Eilish and Justin Bieber, I think, was there as well. We work with companies like Cadillac, Barbie, brands. We did one of the first audio-only dome experiences, which was a really interesting challenge and kind of exciting to hear. We work on video games. We work on live shows a lot. That was sort of my history, and how I started in sound was in live event production and design. This is one of the festivals that we did in Vancouver, where we it was, I think, for around 20,000 people. We repurposed all of the sort of delay stacks of the stadium to build an immersive sound system. This was sort of before amazing companies like you know, Holoplot and Elacoustics built really cool systems that you could do this with. So this is sort of pre sound reinforcement companies getting into the space. What's my next slide? Oh, yeah, there we go. Thank you, Silva. So what do we mean by immersive sound? And I think a lot of people have really different categorizations for this thing. I think for us, we see sound as something that mimics in three dimensions the human perception of the world. And it's a really, I kind of keep going back to this phrase over and over again when we work with clients or when we work on projects. I think for a lot of companies and for a lot of brands, immersive sound means generally just whizzy stuff kind of zooming around. it's more of a special effect. Whereas for the work that we do, we see it more as an opportunity to translate the real world into a transmittable real world. And we try very, very hard to make sure that everything that we do is a translation of the human experience in the real world. I'm going to come back to this because we're going to, I was like, you know, for people who haven't really experienced immersive audio, which is maybe I don't know, like 20% of you, I thought it might be interesting to do like a little experiment in our very spatial sounding room here to try and do, we'll do like a little spatial audio experiment together, but we're going to leave it at the end, so don't play it yet. We're going to come back to it.
I told you we were teasing you.
I thought it might be also interesting to talk a little bit about the evolution of perception, and I think there's probably friends in this room which have their own version of this for the products and services that they sort of provide and sell in this world. But I think we started really in this sort of more subjective systems, and in cinema this would sort of be a television or a 2D display, and now, through the amazing work that so many companies are doing, we're starting to be able to look at these systems as more objective, objective systems. So, the way that we sort of generally break these down is like we try to design them for humans, not machines. And I think there's companies that do really good work at that. I think Yanni and the Google team have made incredible strides forward to be able to design for humans rather than machines. And I think for here we sort of mean that art shouldn't have like a compliance filter to be produced. And there's a lot of immersive audio formats that we don't need to name names, but that really make you work a very specific way. And we try to circumvent that at every stage so that we're not tied to what the technology kind of offers. You have to also give me a time check if I'm speaking to slowly, Chris. We started to call ourselves perceptual engineers rather than sound engineers, and I think it has a lot to do when we work in 3D space, we want to engineer people's perception of the world or the experience or the art, whatever that is. It's been a really useful phrase for us when we talk about our work that sort of explains a little bit more of what we do. One of the things that is missing in a lot of immersive experiences, and maybe the creators here in the crowd might have some insight into this, but we found it really useful to start to hide things so that people can find ways to experience things over and over again and continually be surprised. The natural world does this sort of just by itself. And I think one of the things that's historically been missing in immersive experiences, because it's been sort of more cinematic and sound effect driven, is that it starts to feel very flat very quickly. So if you're creating things, try to hide stuff so that people can find it in the second and third.
Right.
I'll talk faster. Think about cause and effect, context, fairly self-explanatory. That also, which is what I just said before. Okay, so how does this apply to my work? I think you will all be doing very different work, but one of the ways that we can think about this, and I think some of you might have seen this before, we sort of think about scenery. This is some AI imagery that I've just learned how to make. I feel very proud of that. I think I typed in West Coast ocean calming, something like that. We try to break down the work that we do into, firstly, scenes. And here we generally talk about sound fields and beds, and Yanni will talk a little bit about that in his work as well. We talk about static objects. Here we can sort of use these different terms. Again, sound fields, which here we use, sort of higher order ambisonic work, mono and stereo files. And what I wanted to sort of illustrate here is that we have things like a static object like the log, which you wouldn't really think has any great sound or effect to it, but the water flow changes around objects in the scene, and so even these very subtle things can make a really big impact as to how real something feels. Then we think about moving objects, dune buggies and paragliders, but anything that's moving through the scene, and we talk a lot here in terms of like vehicle dynamics modeling and how sound sort of reverberates and moves through space. You can sort of apply this to music and almost any other kind of creative endeavor. And then we think a lot about point of view, so how does that person feel, and how someone feels is sort of harder to mimic with sound because it's going to be different for every person and every person's experience. but it's sort of at the center of everything that we make. So whether you're making a piece of music or a piece of linear, you know, art, a film, or an interactive thing, knowing how someone feels is really important. So thinking about what's right around someone's head, like what sort of, you know, makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, those things are also really important to think about. And then I go back to this, you know, sound should feel like a lifelike three-dimensional experience that is in tune with the human perception of the world. And I think that's it. That's for me.
Thanks. Thank you, Miracle.
Did I make it in time?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. I will say yes.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Yanni.
All right, woo! Thank you.
Yanni.
Hey, so I'm Yanni. I'm from the Google Open Media team. Basically, our team develops various open source technologies when it comes to video compression, still image compression, audio, and also graphics. I have actually a video background, so I've been doing like video compression, video processing for more than 20 years, but now for the past couple of years, I had the opportunity of like actually working with some exciting audio stuff. So before jumping into like to the open source immersive audio format that we have been developing in the Alliance for Open Media, I'll just quickly want to highlight sort of like the problem space where we work, meaning and it kind of starts from like when folks like Mirko and Silvana, they create these super beautiful immersive experiences. For us, it's like how do we create sort of assets that can be streamed bandwidth efficiently and also being able to play back them across the devices. So there's like a lot of work that needs to go into figuring out like how do we do this so that, you know, like here in US, for example, we are often lucky to have like a good internet connection that doesn't apply globally. There are folks that are struggling to have a good connection. So we, when we develop the technology, we really need to take into account like how is the content going to be accessible for everybody in the world. And that's where this tech stuff comes into a place, like how do you create the assets, how do you compress them, but also it's like how do you maintain the creative intent. So when going from that creation to the end device where users are playing it back, we do want to maintain the same sort of feeling that you have in the studio when you're creating the content. So that's sort of the idea, but it's challenging. And for any new technology or any new format, it unfortunately is going to take years to deploy that in the market. We have a good start here with this new format that we are developing, have been developing, but you know, it's going to take a while before we have it deployed across the devices. So then, why open source? Well, I'd say the first thing is like ecosystem-wide collaboration. So, you know, through open sourcing these core technologies, anyone can contribute if they want to. The other big thing is like, you know, for the core media technologies, we do feel that they should be open box rather than a black box. Meaning like for example, as a creator, you should not try to guess what the tech does, for example, for the playback. But you know, all that should be all the information should be openly available, and then figure out like what exactly you know, for example, the rendering does. Cost is one thing. Is like we sort of do feel that cost should not prevent the creativity or the innovation or the deployment, and you know. Having an open source doesn't necessarily mean that it's free, but I mean that's at least when we are talking about sort of this new audio technologies that we are developing, that's sort of the aim for that. And then there's this freedom of creativity and great user experience. What I mean by the freedom of creativity, and you know I'm sure Mirko can give a good examples later on, is like. As a creator, when you are creating your immersive experience, you should not be locked into only certain sort of things you can do in the mixing stage. But what we are trying to do here with the IMF is give a sort of like a toolbox that you know you can pick and choose depending on what your sound mix should include. So it should be up to the creator to decide what makes sense. Okay, so a little bit on the this new format itself. It's called IMF. It's a mouthful, but. And you know, this is what you get when engineers are trying to make
immersive audio models and formats. Immersive audio models and formats.
That's correct. So this is a format that we actually do the development in this organization called Alliance for Open Media, where we have like not only Google but there's like Intel, Netflix, Apple. You know, it's a truly industry alliance. And in the past, the Alliance for Open Media has been more focusing on video processing and video compression. IMF is actually the first audio format which is coming out from the AO Media. And everything we do is in open source and comes in with a royalty-free license, under the royalty-free license. Like I said, it is sometimes, you know, you might... Some people feel like, I mean, this IMF is a Google project. No, it's not a Google project. It's a media project. Yes, our team is heavily involved in the development, but there are other media members that are contributing. For example, Samsung, Netflix, Vimeo. These folks have been very much involved in the spec development. So in a nutshell, what IMF is, I would say the first version of the IMF spec is like, it's a way of putting multi-channel or ambisonics or a combination of both, a way of putting that in a file format so that you can stream and play it back on the device. You're probably wondering what about the audio optics. Don't worry, we are already in developing the next version of the spec, so we are bringing new features to the IMF format. So among those things, audio object support is a feature that we are working on. So as a project, we do want to see the IMF, the standard, to evolve, and ideally with the wide collaboration with everybody in the ecosystem, we would like to come up with a standard that meets basically what creators want, but also the streaming service providers and device vendors. Some of the key components that we have in the spec. So, for example, we use the open source audio codec for the actual compression. We use the open source renderers from the like the ADM EBU open source renderers for speaker layouts, for headphone rendering, binaural rendering. We have the binaural ADM renderer. We also support, or the spec also includes the Resonance Audio, which is that's actually a Google project that was developed already years ago, and it's fairly widely used in the for example in the game engines for the binaural rendering. We are in the, like I said, we are working already on the next generation or the next version of the spec. We are going to be improving the binaural rendering, and hoping to collaborate with the creators and anyone, everybody in the ecosystem to give us sort of like idea. And feedback, like you know how the rendering works. Are we going in the right direction? And things like that. So you will be hearing more about that later this year. And then the content creation. So we basically published this first version of the standard like only a few months ago. So it's brand new. And you know, we have a lot of work to do when it comes to the tools and tooling support for content creation. But the sort of the good news is that you can actually already do a lot with your existing flows, that the mixing flows that you have and existing tools. And you know, I'm sure Mirko can tell a little bit more about that. You know, the experience that Vaudeville team had with the IMF. So you can do a lot. You know, when you're working with the channel beds or objects or ambisonics, the only thing in the end you need to do is to being able to export to an ADM format that complies with the IMF, and we can take it from there. So we have initially these like a more like a command line tools, a little bit like engineering sort of a tools that you can take an ADM file, encode into IMF, and then put it in the MP4 file format file that you know you can upload to, you know, for example, Vimeo or YouTube or whatever service you want your you want to use for the streaming part. And we are also starting to develop like open source plugins for digital audio workstations, so that you know, so that folks can kind of basically mix more, do mixing more with the IMF, being able to export directly from the DAW to IMF format. So this is something we are getting started. Like you know, like always, software development takes time, but you know, we are getting started and hoping to again like get feedback and collaborate with the creators and with the ecosystem while we are developing these tools. So that was sort of my quick summary of on the tech side of things.
And that is straight from the inside. Thank you for that, Yanni. This is very new. As Yanni mentioned, IAMF was announced, in early November. So still very, very new. But really, when you think about what this means, speaking of buzzword bingo, freedom, low cost, low complexity, low bandwidth, et cetera. And this is really where we need to go, and we'll talk more about that in our discussion. Last but not least, Silvana Levy.
Thank you. I'm going to be honest. I've been kind of nervous about presenting today because I'm like, I need to talk tech. I need to talk multipoint, ambisonic, you know, the IMF. And then I'm like, what am I doing? You know, I mean, I got to talk about sound and what sound means for me, how visceral it makes you feel, how it bypasses everything and anything cognitive, and you just kind of tremble in your body, right? That's what I'm here for. I mean, so thank you for my partner and XR agency who kind of like lit that bulb in my head this morning, right? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself if I get this to work. Can you pause it though for a second? I've created live immersive experiences my whole life. I started actually when I realized that this was the way to go. I was a diplomat in DC. I'm Nicaragua. Nicaragua is the second poorest country of the Western Hemisphere. And I was tasked with getting money, right? No one wanted to give me money because they thought we were hanging out with AK-47s. And I'm like, wait a minute, we're not. I'm going to immerse you into my culture. I'm going to do a cultural night. I'm going to give you some rum. You're going to get wasted with flor de caña. You're going to eat my food. You're going to experience my music. And you're going to dance my folklore. I kid you not, the next day, the money was pouring. So I'm like, okay, this is it. That's what we're going to do. And I thank God I just started this beautiful trajectory in New York City, and I ended up opening up places like The Box, you know, where I heard Adele for the first time at Richard Branson's party, right? We were producing and so forth, and all of a sudden I was running around with a sound tech, and I hear this voice, this angelic voice that made my body tremble. That sound, right? And everything that these guys have said, especially Yanni, I'm going to call him my dream maker, and this is a dream factory, right? This guy's going to make the tools that I need in order to make you guys feel what I felt that moment when I heard Adele, right? And what I felt when I opened up the Core Club with Roger Walters from Pink Floyd, right? Or when I did JC's birthday party and Beyonce sang Happy Birthday, Mr. President, like Marilyn Monroe, right? You need to feel that. That's the most important thing. So how do you translate that? Fast forward, I open up and co-founder at XR Agency with Nefertiti Strong, my partner's right here, who's a musician as well, so great. How do we create these worlds in real life and transfer that feeling digitally, right? Because I was such a snob. I was like, you cannot feel what you feel in the real life when you're in digital world. And then the pandemic happened. I'm like, okay. Let me take a step back. Can you feel what we want people to feel? And more so, yes. I mean, there are spatial sound plugins in Unreal. I'm going to show you three videos, actually. And I think I'm going to introduce them before I say all of them, so you don't have to be clicking in. The first one is Blackpink, who's like the hottest K-pop group, right? Highest grossing in the United States. We built, along with our partners in Pixel Canvas, a world where you can actually experience all their assets, right? You walk around, you gamify. The same principles that you do in real life, you do in the cyber worlds. You have to make it engaging. You have to make it exciting. You have to make people go through some sort of journey that you've panned out before, but don't marry them to them, right? Give them that liberty. You know, the surprise things that you were saying, you know, the visuals that bring your eyes to a certain place and then the music plays. You must do that in the cyber worlds as well. So we did that with Blackpink. You walk around this little world, you see the videos, you see the dancing, you see the girls just having fun, you're rocking it. The best thing is to do like some exclusive content, right, in these cyber worlds, so that you can direct people to come to your worlds and give them an additional, enhance what they're seeing in real life, right? Don't just make it like a boring duplicate, just enhance it. Do something that's exclusive for them. Do something that they can only find at XR Agency's Blackpink world, right? You gotta make people want it. You gotta sprinkle the desire as you go along. Again, these are my dream factory people. They're gonna make my dreams and our dreams come true. But what was I thinking talking to you about the multi-beam speaker that I was like, my God. I woke up literally at 4 o'clock in the morning thinking about this. And I'm like, let's go back to the fact that sound bypasses everything. Every cognitive feature that your body has is bypassed by sound. I mean, that really, if there's one thing that we have to remember, is that, and how can we translate that in the cyber worlds, right? So the next video you're gonna see is Saudi Arabia. It's Saudi Arabians are spending a lot of money on their tourism, on their games, on everything in order for them to have a presence in the cyber world. So you're gonna get to experience what it is to walk around Saudi Arabia, right? You hear the people in the streets, you hear the local music, you see the costumes, you see, you know, the screens with footage of what it would be like to be in Saudi Arabia. That's another great example of what spatial sound can do in terms of you experiencing the world that you're getting into. And the last one is, it's kind of a combo. We did this with our partners, again, Pixel Canvas and also Eric Schwartzel, the producer. It's a Perfectoverse. Yeah. On the family. We're on the family. We did a metaverse for Paul Oakenfold. And that metaverse, it's a really cool idea of how it's we created a hybrid, you know, between the live event and the metaverse. The metaverse is on all the screens. Paul Oakenfold was scanned volumetrically. We have a volumetric studio, so now, you know, basically I can make a copy of Anton right there. Boom, 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 put him in the cyber world and have him be dancing with Paul Oakenfold. I mean, how do we just marry these experiences so you don't feel that hurdle and you don't feel any friction between going from the real life experiences, which have to be amazing, right, going into the cyber world? And you are the people that are going to give me the tools, which I shall not name, that would help all of this happen, right? Okay, girl, do it. Hit it.
Woo!
Was that fast enough for you, Chris? Wow. I got more, but...
Yeah. So one of the things that I really loved, and we're going to have a little discussion here in a second, but one of the things I really love about these three is that it really gives you an idea of what you can do as a producer. The Saudi Arabian experience, Silvana and her team took actual site-specific audio and then replicated that. Really fantastic. I mean, and that's obviously a virtual experience. And of course, the hybrid experience with Oakenfold and my good buddy Eric Schwartzel. I didn't know he worked on that. And really, really just exceptional work. But we'll talk more about that in a second. So I mentioned buzzword bingo at the top. One that you should take away today, buzzword is ambisonics. And the question is, what does it do for the larger developer community? Yanni, please start us off on that, because I think this is a huge opportunity. For those who don't know, ambisonics really started about 35, 37 years ago at Virginia Tech. It was kind of languishing in academia. It's only in recent years that this has come out, and this applies directly to what we're doing here with IAMF. So if you can kick us off there.
Yeah, sure. So it's like... So, ambisonics has been around for quite a while. It's been used in the for VR 360 videos for quite a while. Like, I think YouTube rolled out the VR 360 in 2015. Ambisonics is for example, that Saudi Arabia, like that's a perfect example of like where you could apply or use ambisonics to capture sort of the kind of the ambient sounds in the streets and being able to move there, hear it all around. So it's like so it's a great way of like capturing that sort of the special audio experience, but it's also efficient way of streaming the content to the end device. So I I know there's a lot of like special audio today is created with so-called object-based audio, which means that you have tens or even hundreds of objects in your mix. But if you would actually stream all those as a separate channels to the end device, like you just blow up the bandwidth, and that's why even today what happens is that you sort of like when you're playing around or using the audio objects, I mean it's always being folded down to something less, a smaller set of objects that are streamed. The other alternative to consider is like, how about if you go into the third order ambisonics, like that's 16 channels and maintains a really high quality and high resolution spatial audio experience. And that's something, for example, in the IMF, what we have today is like you can stream third order ambisonics and the intention is that you have the playback support not only on the VR 360 goggles, but you have it on all of the TVs, all the phones, you have it on the web, open your Chrome browser, plug in your headphones, and you're able to play it back. So that's what we are aiming for. So it's, like I said, ambisonics has been around for quite a long time, very much focused on the 360 VR experiences. We want to bring that to any device. That's
right.
Where we are.
And that gets back to Silvana's Dream Factory toolkit, if you will. Mirko, give us your take on where ambisonics fits in this developer world.
Who here is familiar with the term ambisonics? I'm guessing most of you.
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good number. Good.
So for those who are not familiar with the term, the way that we think about it, and maybe Yanni, you can correct me if I'm wrong on a technical level, but it's a way to reproduce sound that more closely mimics how humans hear sound. And I think that's probably why there hasn't been a huge amount of uptake up until this point, because it's only becoming more relevant as we start to have more immersive playback systems and technologies that can actually do it. Up until recently, it's really been the sort of focus for academia. So what was the question, Chris?
I think you've kind of answered it a little bit.
Where do we see the use case?
Right, exactly. In other words, where does that come in with respect to what you're doing, in terms of design?
Yes, yeah. Well, so for us, we use it as a way to bring people closer into the worlds that we're trying to create. And so most of the things that the work that we've done with Yanni and his team was really to showcase, for the first time, where sort of feature film style content can use these types of audio technologies or audio systems to bring someone closer into the world that you want them to be in. So for instance, we did like this sort of drone train video. And there's a part of in the video where the drone flies like underneath the train. And to do that with objects would be really, really hard, I think almost impossible, because you're really relying on large parts of the picture to have a lot of sound pressure that you can output. Whereas with ambisonics, it was actually it's a really easy thing to achieve. So that's for us, it's about putting people closer into that sort of emotional real world center point.
Yeah, let's stay with you for a second here, because the game design world, I mean, we talk about gamifying audio, but I think that you'll have richer experiences with IAMF. Is this going to lead to more human-centric 3D storytelling?
Yes, 100%. And the more tools, the more systems there are available for people to work in these types of formats, the more closely we'll be able to replicate.
Right, because you're doing work, for example, with VR game.
Yes, we're working on a few mixed reality games where we're using these systems specifically to make people feel like they're... It's even as something as simple as putting someone in a room. Like rooms have... Like this room, it's got like a weird tonality to it. A very gold roof tonality.
But there are only three people who were killed in this room. So
it's... It, you know, rooms have a tone, and the tone sets the feeling of the space, right? Like, you know, that here we can, like, we have this feeling of like, well, the air conditioning's cold, it feels sort of weird and reverby, but also like there's a, feels like there's a looseness of connections between the rooms next door. It's like the room has a feeling to it, and I think even if we use these sort of ambisonic techniques to emulate the acoustics and the feeling of a space, it goes a really long way to making people feel like they're really there.
Yeah, and by the way, for those who are going to GDC next week in San Francisco, anyone here? If you're there or you have a friend there, have them get in touch with Mirko, who is there. Silvana, one of the most interesting things I think that you do and where you think about audio is in this totality of human experience, and particularly with venues, but also buildings, hotels, or even, you know, structures that we don't, you know, necessarily think about. It could be a mosque, it could be a hotel, it could be a hospital. Where are we with immersive audio design for architects and buildings? I mean, can we experience immersive audio embedded in structures and buildings? Where are you thinking along those lines, and how do you see yourself maybe designing for that kind of experience?
In buildings themselves?
Yeah.
I'm thinking more so location for performers, right? Have actually a great system in the building, of course, but give the sound engineer some liberty. Don't map out the whole sound already 100%. Because I do a lot of immersive experiences, which is not, there's no stage or anything, just people walking through different rooms and so forth.
Right.
So where is the performer at what time, and what prompt is that going to give the sound engineer in order to create that sound? So it's kind of like when you see the lightning, right? And then the thunder is coming. Like, what are you seeing before you actually get into a room that a sound is going to be emitted? And the only way that I think that can be done right now, which a lot of advances have been done in that, is by the performer who's grabbing you or taking you to a different place. You know, you're following that sexy woman to the corner. She's got some location-based thing that's prompting the sound engineer to already start the sound in that room, right?
Right.
And envelop the whole experience in that.
And it's interesting too, because
you can't have something playing all the time.
Right.
Right? Okay.
But those are really interesting directional choices I'm not saying that they're driven by directional audio, but I think one of the cooler things about what Ambisonics and IAMF brings is that you have that capability to create, as Mirko said, more human perception of sound. So if we hear the dog barking 30 meters away as opposed to the mosquito that's, you know, on your left ear, that's something that I think gives the developer and the designer more freedom. So I really think that, knowing what you've done in the past, that the even near term future is going to be mind blowing. But I just like that idea of what you can do with physical spaces. Speaking of more constrained spaces, South by Southwest has really become one of the leading virtual festivals in the world. And we once again saw some amazing work this year. But the XR space does seem to be in serious need of an immersive audio upgrade. Mirko, what shape do you think this will take? Where do you think we need to go in this immersive world?
I think the work that Yanni and the team at AO Media and Google are doing goes a really long way to starting to bridge that connection. I think that's something that's come up in conversations yesterday and, just with our friends here over the last week, is the current constraints that we have are really largely thanks to the strongholds of a couple of companies, and the ability to make these systems more open, accessible, and adaptable to artistic intent and artistic vision. It starts to take the technology compliance out of the creative equation, and the more we sort of open up that scope through systems like IAMF and what will probably become, you know, a myriad of different interpretations of these open source standards, will go a really long way to giving people more democratizing access to that creativity that's right now is the, you know, the purview of like just a few companies that charge a lot of licensing costs.
Yeah, we're not going to mention their name, but you know who we're talking about. So speaking of constrained spaces, Yanni, talk about immersive audio with respect to automotive infotainment. We haven't really touched on that yet, but that's, I think, really a huge area for getting that kind of upgrade.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so the car itself, I mean, you have multiple speakers. It's a great setup for any sort of like immersive content. Yes, you have the background noise and all those kind of things, but it's a great place to enjoy like spatial audio experiences. And that's actually something we are hoping to also hopefully demonstrate a little bit later this year as well, like what the what IMF could bring into the car experience. So it's absolutely one of the areas we want to look into and see like what sort of like a like more immersive experience we could bring in the car. Like yet to be seen is like when, like I said, I mean, going back to what I said and where I started from, is like it takes time to deploy these technologies in devices. Like a lot of what we are focusing on right now is like I said, TVs, phones, things like that. Car, like it takes years to get anything new into a car. I mean, they have like a 7 or 8 year design cycle. So, but you know, I think we have a good chance to get there and get there also something better for the automotive experience as well.
Yeah, Mirko, you want to hit on?
Oh, I was just going to say one of the really exciting things about things also taking a long time is that it gives you a chance to envisage the future in a different way. You know, like what is a vehicle going to be like in 8 or in 10 years' time by the time something actually
Well, hopefully comes out. It will be autonomous and we'll get to really rock out to some stuff that Silvana has designed. It will be the best ride you've ever had.
I'm excited. Well, I'm waiting. I'm not saying it's great. It's going to take years. I'm waiting for you, Yanni, to develop my dreams.
Hopefully, but
so we have this project of digitalizing Latin songs. We're having some conversations with people from the UN, and we're talking about, you know, there's so many old songs that are going to be perished, like Celia Cruz, Tito Puentes, and all these people. And Yanni was telling me of how we can remaster those in a way where, my God, I think Celia Cruz would be like azúcar if she heard
yes.
it, man. She would go crazy. I mean, that
Soca
for me
soul.
Is exciting.
Yeah,
that is going to excite me that you can like actually use it not just with the things that we're going to be creating, but the things that need to be
yes.
salvaged.
And since we're in the music portion of South By, I know we're running up against time, we'll be outside to answer these questions. But if you have questions about catalog, please talk to us, and particularly Mirko and also Rob Calder over there from Vaudeville, because you probably read in the news about various independent labels that are pushing up against what Apple is charging for spatializing. So we definitely have some solutions there. It is a major, major, major issue. And absolutely, I would want to hear Tito Puente in something more immersive. I met the man years ago. He's super cool. But again, you know, I live in New York. So before we get to your questions, I've been told to remind you that inside of your South by Southwest Go app, as part of your session information, there's a place for you, the attendees, to rate this session. Please do so. And we just love it because we think that you're a great audience. And before we get to your voice and voices, Maria is now going to bring back that famous QR code. It was not a mirage. Please now capture that and play that audio. And for those who are doubting me, it is a forest. It was recorded somewhere near Rovaniemi in northern Finland, where Yanni's from. No, I'm just making that up.
So the idea here is for those who haven't experienced any immersive audio, this is a small way that you can experience it. We did try and get a big speaker system in here, which was very difficult. So we just thought you all have tiny little speakers on your phones. And I don't know. That's it. That sounds pretty cool, actually.
It does, because it's like almost location-based little speakers all around,
Well,
right?
Think of we have these birds in different parts of the room here. And, you know, if you ask a bad question, just think of it as the crickets that... just kidding. This is the moment for you to step forward and ask your questions, because we have some very serious technical people in the audience.
It's the hold music.
And, yes, this is music on hold. Thank you for calling South by Southwest. We'll get to your question now. Go ahead.
I'm probably not the most technical audience member, but I am a UX researcher, so I'm very curious about what the research approach has been to kind of measure the human impact of the spatial design and sound awareness.
That is a great question. Thank you. Mirko, I'm going to throw that to you.
Yeah, that is a really good question. So not a lot at this point, but we, in Vancouver, we're working on research projects with the Vancouver General Hospital to measure the impacts of specifically environmental soundscapes, spatially accurate environmental soundscapes, kind of like what you just heard, and how it can be used to reduce anxiety and depression. And specifically in very acute cases. So it's hard to measure in things like games because they're very personal. You know, it's a hard measurement. But if you look at sort of the healthcare applications for these types of systems, they actually become easier to measure because you can measure it in patient outcomes just like you would anything else. So that's very specifically interesting for us, and it's definitely an easier measurement point than in entertainment.
That's a great question. Next question.
Hi, folks. Thanks for sharing your enthusiasm, Silvana. It was good to see you in flight today. It does feel like it's the start of a wave in this room, which is really exciting. My name's Anton. I'm starting a podcast in the climate change space. So I have a tendency towards apocalyptic thinking. When we think about these environments that you folks are at the beginning of creating, particularly in the real world, and you're coming into people's spaces and then they're coming into your spaces. Sound can be used for good and for evil, right? So you can put people into trance-like states. There's all sorts of, you know, amazing things that you can do, but also challenging things that can be done. What do you think about that as a problem, particularly as you're probably going to be working with big brands that are creating these experiences and trying to create connections which might influence people into the wrong direction or in an inappropriate direction?
Yeah, I mean, I can maybe give a good example of that, of the work that we've done together. So I think from a creative sound company's perspective, we're always, you know, we have clients that we work for. And I think a lot of the starting point to make sure that you're hitting the mark in terms of like this sort of reality modeling idea is to talk a lot about what it is that you're trying to achieve emotionally and physically. So, you know, a lot of the early conversations that we had weren't so much around technical. It was actually, you know, what are the places that we want to be able to transport people into? And I think if you do your job right and you listen and you're open for feedback as well, that you do something and then, you know, maybe it didn't hit the mark, is that you don't take it too personally and you just, you know, try again. I get your point around audio can be used for good and bad. I mean, like anything. But I also think that the ability that we are starting to get more and more of to be able to do that also pushes art in a very great point, because what's good for one person is bad for another person and vice versa. So I think there's actually this opportunity around the more kind of open, emotional, manipulative qualities that 3D audio has.
Perhaps. Influential.
What's that?
Influential.
Yeah, influential. Yeah, but, you know, you're manipulating someone's point of view, right? So it is becoming a more powerful tool, but I also think it's going to create more powerful art that comes with it and more challenging art, I hope.
Yeah. Great question. Next.
May I just add that?
Yeah, please. Go ahead.
Intention, right? The artistic intention is very important. And I mean, Esther Perel said on Sunday, music creates collective effervescence. Music is joy, right? So the intention needs to be underlying. I mean, I don't know, as a creative company, if I'm working with someone whose intention is not there, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very personal answer.
Please, your question. Thanks.
Somebody had to ask an AI question. As you're talking about the bandwidth issue, which completely makes sense if you have all these sound sources that you can't stream them in real time, it seems a little bit like a neural radiance field for visual. Are you seeing anybody working on something like an audio radiance field?
Great question. Yanni.
A cute question. I have to say, it's like I haven't been looking into that area in that much. So, maybe I can take one step back. So, in the context of the IMF, which is this format that we are developing, we are still more relying on sort of like a known ways of like how to compress the audio. Yes, some efforts on bringing something more efficient, but again, it's like so. There are basically two things here. It's like from the IMF or the firm perspective, is like first of all, create something which can be widely used from the creation to the delivery and playback, and then as part of the delivery, at some point, I do envision that we will come up with something more efficient that helps with the bandwidth. There are already some activities within the Alliance for Open Media, for example, to start looking into is like how should we think about compressing the audio, because it's currently the IMF as a standard it's just using what's out there. So we are starting to look into that, and but again, these are sort of things that takes years to develop. I'm sure we'll have something good and better coming, but yeah.
Really solid question. Thank you. Last question. Make it a good one. No pressure.
Thank you. I hope it hadn't been answered at the very beginning of the talk. It will be a bit technical, maybe not interesting that much, but I would like to have some recommendation on the workflow to process, like, I have ambisonic files and I want to mix them and also be able to export them in the Dolby Audio Spatial format. And I have Ableton, but I'm not satisfied with the Max for Live solution. Maybe you have some insight of a product they will launch. I'm thinking about buying the Nuendo, but what do you use, basically?
So we use a lot of different tools, and I think the panel yesterday did a really good job of talking about how all of these tools have a very different sound to them. So there are a couple of plugins that we use a lot. One of the main decoders that we use from ambisonics into other, more channel-based formats. Like if you wanted to translate a third-order ambisonic file into like a 7.1.2 file, for instance, if you wanted to put into a Dolby Atmos bed, we use the Harpex decoder a lot. It's not cheap, but it's definitely the best one that to our ears. But there are some free ones, like the Rode plugin. The Rode Soundfield plugin is really interesting. Actually, you can do a lot of really cool kind of shaping with it that you can't do with others. I would encourage you to try a bunch, because each one has a very different kind of sonic quality to it, and it's actually interesting kind of hearing the developer's kind of own bias in the filtering and decoding system. But Harpex definitely is the one that we've used the most, and actually most of the work that we've done for Google is using the Harpex encoding and decoding system. Yeah,
great question. You. That's going to wrap it for us. I want to thank Maria and Sophia and also Jeff, who did some work for us before. These are volunteers. Please give it up for them. We don't run this show without them. We really can't do it without them. I'm so grateful for South by Southwest support. Thank you. Thank you for you. We will be outside to dive deeper, but it's been great talking to you. I hope you enjoyed being in the forest. And I can't do it without my great panelists. Mirko Vogel from Vaudeville Sound. Give it up for Mirko. Yanni Wolpinen from Google. Thank you, Yanni. Kiitos. Silvana Levy from XR Agency. I'm Chris Paff from Chris Paff Tech Media LLC. Hopefully we'll see you back next year. Thank you.